We did think that is it the end of our business? Will people go back to school ever? Will they need in the same demand kind of thing? And that's where what we hear from the schools, and they are actually willing to sign contracts with us and like get us more business kind of thing. That gives me the thing that the business demand has not died.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Mind Gravity Podcast. On our today's shows, we have a husband-wife founding couple. We haven't done this before, but I'm so excited to share this story. We have the founders of KidsJet. And first off, we have Benny Sheikh, who's the founder and CEO. She is a businesswoman of various backgrounds. Benny started her career in healthcare, advising dentists how to establish their practices from scratch. But after birth of her twin sons, Kabir and Ruhan, she experienced the challenge of balancing her children's schedule with her professional life. And in May 2014, she started KidsJet in an effort to simplify life for parents and kids. And just a few years later, her husband, Ashish Chaparwal, also jumped into the family business and now is the acting CFO and business development head for KidsJet. So without any further ado, let's get on to the conversation with the founders of KidsJet, Benny and Ashish. Welcome to the Mind Gravity Podcast, Ashish and Benny.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a pleasure. And I would love to hear a bit more about what you guys have been up to or your journey on KidsJet. But before we dive in, would love a brief introduction by both of you.
Okay, I'll start. I'm Ashish Chaparwal. Me and Benny founded KidsJet in 2013. My background is in finance. But, you know, we talk more about KidsJet in a minute. But the idea was appealing. We wanted to do something more for the society kind of thing. So that's kind of the thing. But by education from IIT Delhi, 95 batch. Benny?
Hi, I'm Benny Sheikh. I started KidsJet in 2013. I come from healthcare background and I've done healthcare, especially dental industry, been there 10 years. I was a consultant and I'd always seen the need of how parents struggling and the need of transportation in the education industry, how parents were struggling. Both working parents would struggle to send their children to school, who would pick them up, after school programs, etc. And that had always been in my mind. I mean, I was also a student one time and always taking yellow school buses. So I knew that that space, there was still a space in that industry. And in 2010, I had twin boys. And then becoming a mom, I think that industry got more closer to me when my kids got in preschool. And I started to talk to other parents and I realized there was still a space and there was that need still. There was a void in the whole parent network. And that's when I started putting stuff together. Me and Ashish put our research together and we started KidsJet. And we are basically a B2B platform. We serve schools and organizations. We partner with them for the school year and we do transportation for children for both in the morning and in the afternoon for schools, sports programs, after schools, etc. So we do the whole transportation package, field trips, outdoor education, anything you name it.
Got it. No, and thank you so much for that brief intro about KidsJet and your background as well. Would obviously love to dig a little deeper on, as you already mentioned, what KidsJet is. So you obviously saw a problem in the market. It was more personal. And that typically seems to be the genesis point of a lot of great businesses that get built. So one question that comes to mind is like how much time you spend on ideation while you were thinking about KidsJet, right? And what kind of spurred the idea? No, okay, this could be a great business model.
No, so let me take a stab at it and Benny can add. So when we had our boys, twin boys, Benny started with the idea that, hey, I want to do something. We are struggling with our own transportation because she wanted to join back work. We were both working parents. We were struggling to figure out how we will send our kids to preschool, okay? So we saw the demand and we were looking around and we couldn't find anything which was like reliable. Like sending your kids is the most precious package. Like it's not an amazing thing, right? So you're looking for somebody, you can hire nannies and stuff like that. So that problem was there. And at the same time, Uber and Lyft and there were other few startups who were like upcoming and they were like, we were thinking why there is nothing like this for us in like for parents like us in the space. And that was the very thought that says, hey, let's explore the idea for Uber for kids. Okay, so that was the ideation point of it. We actually started the idea for as a Uber for kids idea. But within 6 months, we realized it's not for us because the scale required in the morning, like everybody, all the parents want to send their school in the morning. They don't want in the afternoon. And the dealing with the parents and it was too much for us to handle. And we soon realized that we cannot be an Uber for Kids company. And then we pivoted more towards more a B2B platform towards schools and say, hey, there is demand. We saw the demand from the school. So we said, hey, why not become like a private school bus? Both of us coming from the India, we saw how kids go to school in a shared ride-share kind of transportation. And that was the thought. Like that was as simple and as boring idea as possible. And to start with, Benny?
I feel it's creating a social environment for children as well. Individually, there will be several cars going to school. A lot of cities limit cars coming to their school area or residential area if the schools are in residential. We work a lot with private schools, so they do have their set of limitations. So the whole idea of ride share was really accepted well. The kids just love seeing each other in the morning and kind of hanging out, trying to fight for their seats, sitting together and siblings being together. So yeah, I think it's the whole social environment. Parents get to see each other when they're dropping their children. So sipping coffee or we're picking up, you know. So it's just, I think it's more to it. It's the group that we create and the ride share at the same time.
I would add one thing to it, like a lot of when we were thinking about it and in our pivoting kind of thing, when we deeply analyze this idea of kids transportation, like it's different than a taxi service. You think about it, a kid has to go to school every day at 8 a.m. and come back from school at 2 or 3 p.m. It's a recurring transportation, happens every day, needs 100% reliability. It's different than I'm taking a taxi from an airport and coming back and I can cancel it and I get another driver. So it's like 2-year-old, 4-year-old kid needs to get a reliable transportation partner. And then the point which people miss is that people don't have $20 for every ride or $30 every ride every day. These are families who cannot afford like a $2 to $3, $5 ride. That's where affordability aspect is super important. That's when we saw the failure in Uber for Kids model that you cannot survive as a business, even if you can grow the market and have a lot of demand, but you cannot survive as a business with $2 to $3 per ride. You need to make, if you want to be economical as well as affordable and provide service, you need to do ride share. So just giving some background on why the Uber for Kids kind of model doesn't work in this area. Though I will not say there's definitely people who will afford that kind of money, but it's not for everyone.
Yep, no, I totally agree, especially when it comes to kids and they're your most precious assets. You don't want to be putting them in places that which you yourself cannot come to trust or believe in would provide that safety net, right? Actually, one thing that struck me while you were talking about is your experience when you were growing in India, but since you mentioned you both of you came from India. So how did that childhood or experiences back home kind of influence what you were trying to do? And how was that journey of, you know, You came to US with the big American dream, and a lot of us like come from India and from other parts of the world. So how that translated from where you started and where you are right now?
No, so absolutely. Like this idea, if you look, like when we talk to a lot of VCs initially when we're doing it, they say it's a very boring idea, mm-hmm. frankly. That the word boring came so many times. And the truth was, it's a very boring idea. It's a simple idea, but it has a lot of roots because you need it. You need it every single day. When I was growing, when going to school, we either use like auto rickshaw, which is a shared ride service kind of thing, like a concept in India, very affordable, and or a school bus or a yellow school bus concept. And that's how I went to school every single day. And that thought kind of stuck with me when I was looking transportation for my kids. Like, and the options were you either hire a nanny or figure something out with some the private school bus. The private school here don't even have yellow school bus options here. It's so expensive. And I was like, how is this possible that we are struggling with some basic needs, which are kind of, I will say, solved in the developing worlds like India and China kind of thing. So we took that idea, what we grew up with and born, and then said, hey, there has to be a place and marketplace for it. So yeah, it definitely influenced our thought process in this one.
Yeah. For me, I grew up partially in Middle East and Canada. Okay. But both the places, I've taken public transportation always, yellow school buses, or as post-middle school, it was public transportation. So for me, for my, you know, especially Canada, being the weather being so rough and, you know, storms and, you know, storms, rains, you know, snowy days. My parents used to be worried. There was no trackability. There was no cell phones that I used to carry. So I have been in a couple of hour delays sometimes, and my mom would wonder, where is she? And, you know, just overall not being with a friend or with somebody, or, you know, just being on your own. So I think for safety purposes, I really feel this creates a bond, you know, what we have created in Kids Chat, especially sending your child in a single or Uber or Lyft or, you know, single individual car versus being together. I feel the families feel more comfortable. I'm a mom myself. And I would definitely, if I were to choose those options, I would feel more comfortable being in a network group. It's more safety, being with other children if something were to happen. The other thing I feel is the cost. I think it, you know, what Ashish, the economics works out better. And overall, I think when they're all going to the same school, we can always group them up together. So the school also likes it.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And I think I see the point, because I grew up partly in India as well as in Middle East, and now in the US, kind of seeing a lot of different ways of transportation. The modules vary dramatically. And in the US, it seems to be much expensive compared to the other two regions that I just mentioned. No, I think this is a fascinating idea. So when you talk about the network of these school buses, or people who are part of this network and wanting to send kids through KidsJet, so how do you establish that partnership? Do you own a lot of these buses? Do you go partner with a bunch of different companies that kind of white labeling through KidsJet's platform? How does that work?
Oh, that's a different. So we started with the thing of when we said, hey, we want to be a private school bus, there was nobody to partner with. Initially, we wanted to be like a technology platform to just connect schools with the providers, which we call like the limousines of the world, or the people who can run the transportation. So we started with that idea, but not many people were excited because they wanted to see the concept in action. So when we actually built our own fleet to demonstrate that this can be done. And we wanted to learn also, because we wanted to, so we partner with a lot of companies like Nissan and other stuff on the e-mobility side, on Teslas and stuff like that. So to make, develop the technology along with the, which kind of provide the safety. So we needed our own network and like a playground kind of thing. Once that concept got crystallized, we were able to partner with a lot of providers whose vans and like whose buses were sitting around, and they could see our fleet saying how this could be done. So we replicated our model in using their fleet. So now if you see KidsJet, it's our fleet, which we use as a playground, as a concept testing kind of thing. But we use majority of what we call partner networks with the white labeling, and they operate for us during the ride. So we kind of like, becoming more like a platform in that area. But initially when we started, there was nothing like it. So we have to develop our own fleet.
Got it. Yeah, no, I would imagine that would be a lot of asset undertaking on your balance sheet. And yes. scaling that might not be the easiest way, especially if you're not getting the venture capital, which I want to touch base on next is, you mentioned earlier, like a lot of VCs and people you talked to said the idea was boring, right? Yes. And we talked prior to this conversation as well, because that not all ideas are ripe for like venture backing. And you mentioned KidsJet was not. Could you add a little more color to it and what ideas typically tend to become venture backed versus ones that do not?
Yeah. I think like our experience when we were trying to talk to VCs, there were a few VCs who were interested who were in ed tech education side. So they liked the idea, but they didn't like the idea of us owning assets. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they stay away from companies where they're asset heavy. And they want to see a growth path, which was like more like a hockey stick and grow. And they throw a lot of money at you and they want to see quarter over quarter, like a really a hockey stick kind of graph. We didn't feel comfortable giving those kind of commitments for two reasons. One, we were very concerned about the safety of the kids, because in this business, you do not want to be on the front page of a newspaper for any incident, because you'll be wiped off next day, no matter what, because you're really dealing with kids, and your safety and reliability is very, very important. The things of sexual abuse, like there are a lot of things which you have to watch for in this scenario, because you're transporting young kids. So that aspect of it, we were not comfortable where VCs wanted us to throw money but grow at an exponential rate in different cities kind of thing. So we took a path where we said, we understand the model, we like the idea, and we wanted to be a more successful private company and grow at our own pace, develop the things which we think is, develop a process as well as product in terms of technology, which can guarantee us that kind of reliability and safety, and then only grow at our own pace, right? So if you think like what Silicon Valley likes is a tech ideas, completely asset-free, which can grow overnight in 30 countries, we were not that idea at all.
Right. Yep. So this was a more, sound approach, more measured KPIs, and taking to more risk parameters, just making sure that all of those boxes are getting checked, instead of just, focusing on growth and we can fix everything as later mentality. That's typically
yes.
And I think that comes up with its own pains too. And you've been in operations for 5 years at this point.
Yes, yes.
And you're a husband-wife team, and which we don't hear about such team as co-founders that often. So would love to bring about that side of this story is like how do you manage the responsibility, right? You're running a home, then you're running a company, and there's obviously challenges when you have to make decisions. So who wears what hats when?
Absolutely. So I would jump in, and then Benny definitely should chime in. It's basically when we started, so Benny started the idea. I did not join her initially. And she grew the idea for at least 1 or 2 years. And the demand was such that we actually went out and said, hey, we need a co-founder to help her out and to grow the business. And we actually talked to a few people as for a co-founder. But then we thought like, if the business is growing, why not I myself join and help her out rather than doing my day job kind of thing? So it is definitely challenging in terms of husband-wife team, because you can. It's very hard to separate work life at home versus at work. So we definitely had our own challenges initially to separate the areas where we were focused. Especially, so my area of strength is more growing the business, talking to partners, bringing more business online, and Benny take care of all the operations, current clients, a lot of HR responsibilities and people and stuff like that. So Benny, you want to chime into that?
Yeah, I didn't have a choice. I wore all hats. I did sales, door-to-door sales to all schools. I came disappointed. Well, then I had some really good clients who joined me, and soon it was word of mouth. So even I did everything in the beginning. So the team was small. And then as we grew, we had more people joining. We had operations handled. But I mainly handle client relations because those are my initial old clients, and they mean a lot. And take care of overall problems if they have any ever thing to communicate with me. So I do sales, basically the top level sales, and operations, day-to-day operations. I am in the office, and that's the key. I think our day needs to run smooth. That's our goal, basically. That's the key. If we just achieve our day running smoothly without any hurdles, without any glitches in our trips, I think that's a successful day, and we come home happy. I manage your full peninsula, San Francisco. So I sit in San Francisco office, and I manage full peninsula, East Bay, etc. All those counties, you know, Santa Clara, peninsula up. And Ashish is in the San Francisco office. We try and keep ourselves separate. And he manages Marin County and San Francisco and all those areas if there are issues, because then we have local presence there. That's how we run the show, basically. We have a good team. We have amazing drivers, which we have groomed, and they're still with us from my initial days. Wow. And I think those are the key, because I really, really depend and enjoy working with all my team, and especially the drivers, because they are eventually the face of the company. They are the ones out there dealing with the children, communicating with families, day to day. You know, they are the ones who are driving the children, and retention is so important, and all those drivers have been with me, and I think that's the key for a lot of a trust that we have with our schools, with our families, because they see the same drivers every day. It's like family.
Right. No, I totally agree. And it's fascinating to see how you have delineated kind of the roles for each one of you and focusing mm-hmm. on those areas. Because a lot of times, like, especially in private companies, the hats are always exchanged. But having a clear goal that these are some of the KPIs or OKRs that need to be met kind of helps channel the energy in the right direction and help continue to grow, because growing businesses have growing pains. And you mentioned that, you know, your day-to-day, your job essentially is to make sure every day is a success. But I think it sounds good on the outside and everyone wants to achieve that way. But obviously being in existence for 5 years, what have been the bigger challenges that you faced along the way, keeping aside the venture investment side that's not happening, or the day-to-day, what are the biggest challenges that you have accompanied and how you've tackled those?
I'll take some. So I think the biggest challenge for our company has been scalability. Okay, so for us, that we try to grow, like, so the question came to our mind a lot of times was, should be a small company in many cities in US, okay, or we should be the biggest company in Bay Area, mm-hmm. okay? And so from the economics point of view, both of them work, because you can be the biggest player in Bay Area and grow a very successful company. A lot of companies have done it in the private world to be capture the whole area, and it's a huge market. Like, Bay Area alone is a $1 billion market. Or you want to be like a small player in LA, San Diego, Austin, and we could do that. So we tried that approach. And the challenge to break that ground in terms of, because as you grow, you need to spend, and we were growing organically. So you have to create offices, you have to create people, you have to create things so that you have to create a whole structure. And that we underestimated, like, how much it takes to grow in different cities. So a scalability model was a challenge, and we will still say that we're trying to discover as we go, and we took our decisions as we were, like, based on the timing, that who we want to be. Do we want to be the biggest player in the Bay Area, or do we want to be small player in small cities? So I will say that has been a challenge for us from day one. Ben?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. Agree to every word he said. I think a biggest challenge for me personally, because I was so alone. I mean, he's always been very supportive, but I was really alone as a founder for the first 2.5 to 3 years, roughly. And it's very stressful. It's very lonely journey. You feel very dejected. There are days where you feel that. And you feel so shitty. And you just feel like you just want to quit. And then the next moment you're like, you just created this and you just cannot give up. And you just have to just, you know, so you take a day at a time. And I just personally feel hiring was a big struggle because every day I just struggled with hiring. Hiring and sales was very, very tricky. I come from healthcare, and for me, sales was very, very difficult. I really picked it up well. I would do it well myself because I would be natural.
Yeah.
And I just tell my story. I wasn't salesy. Right. I never am till date salesy, but I just sold what I had. People accepted it, but running a sales team, hiring salespeople, and managing them, I think that was very, very painful.
Right.
We finally decided to get rid of the sales team. Once Ashish joined in, we're like, okay, let's just clean up. That's not working out. It's more time to manage them than running the show peacefully. I think sales was managing the sales team was difficult. Overall, hiring has been challenged.
Sure.
You know, because you're a small company, you have decided that you want to grow organically. And the other pressure of defining yourself that you are a firm that needs to raise money from VC versus, you know, sexy versus boring.
Right.
So that's, you know, I've been to several VC meetings where you just, you know, they like your idea, but they don't find it quite sexy. That's the word they use. And they have questions with a female founder, not having a co-founder.
Yeah.
You're a mom. How are you going to do it? You might just quit it one day. And not having that trust, though, several questions of that sort. And you just come home and you're like, you know, you are positive unit economics. Do you really, I mean, those kind of pressures, do you really need to raise the money? But again, being in the valley, there is a lot of pressure because anybody who hears that you have a startup, the first question they ask you, how much did you raise? and you're like, I'm trying to do my first round. And then I think, and I'm not from that industry. I'm not a techie person. I've never raised money. I come from a business background. So we always believe, you know, you throw in everything you have. You pitch in everything you have. You give you 100% all the cash that you have. You just put in and you just run the show and grow organically. That's what I believe in. So I would be like, you would come home and you think, you really need to raise the money just to have a startup here. And I made those efforts and come back and you just realize, you know what, that's not for me. I needed that space. I wanted to be independent.
Yeah.
And this is your baby. You just cannot let anybody rule you and be, and I don't know, if you have that choice.
Yeah. No, I think this is really refreshing because I see this a lot myself. There's a tendency of what's known as the imposter syndrome, right? Like you got to follow what everyone else is doing. If not, just kind of fake it till you're there.
Yeah.
This is really refreshing to hear from you that you are like, yep, no, I don't think that's the path.
Yeah.
So, and that's fascinating. And thank you for sharing that.
I did follow. I mean, there would be days where you feel like, no, I want to raise. I want to be able to say I raised this many million dollars. And then I would come home and be like, where would I use that money? I mean, do I really need it? So yeah, we were lucky enough to have a very positive from the first month. It was going well. It was positive cash flow. I honestly did not need to raise any money to run the show. I had always invested whatever I made from KidsJet and invested and did not pay myself. We just ran the show that way.
I think that's a great story, Benny. I mean, it's really kudos to how you have kind of channeled it and how you have helped it grow. And when I talk to my friends who are female founders and trying to run their own startup or their solo founders, they face very similar challenges. And you touched upon earlier, like there's a high level of stress, especially when you're a solo founder, plus you're a female, plus you're a woman of color. And that just kind of keeps things keep stacking up against you. So in that mindset, when VCs are telling you, yeah, you're not a sexy business, and yes, I'm a solo founder and you don't have much help, how do you cope with that kind of stress? Like, this is a recurring theme and a lot of people don't talk about it. What was your kind of go-to in a space when you were like, okay, everything's down, I don't know what to do next?
Yeah, it is stressful. I don't know. I don't want to think about it. The first 2-3 years were very stressful, especially the first couple of years were very stressful. You're trying to put your 100%. My kids were little. Luckily, I had a great nanny, and she took over the home and helped me raise the kids, and we still have her, which is amazing. But on the other hand, you're putting your 100%, you're putting your 10, 12 hours a day in the office trying to, cope up with the day, trying to, put your strategies together. And then here you have that stress. And I personally, you can't talk to anybody. You don't have any friends. It's, as I mentioned earlier, it is very lonely. And you just talk to yourself and be like, what do I do? My bounce back person would be Ashish. I would just talk to him. He would be busy. I mean, there are days where he would be very busy and you just feel like, what the heck? Where do I go and talk what I feel like? And you just kind of carry on with what you do. I think overall, the passion that you carry, if you want to do something, I think that's the drive that ultimately carries you. That just takes you further. So it's your personal drive.
Got it. Yeah. It needs to be intrinsic and having the right support network that takes over that.
Yes. And there's not much of a support too. I mean, you can talk to your family, but they can, the responses that I would get from my parents, like, why you need to do it? I mean, you're just signing up for too many things. Just quit it. So I always got to quit as an answer. It's like, you signed up too much. So I would be like, okay, that's not the door I need to knock. So I think Ashish had been, that's where we've known each other for a long time and we're just really good friends and we can bounce back ideas. And he's always been, there are days where I want to quit. He's the one who kind of brought me up together and is like, okay, let's sit together and figure out where you're really struggling. And, or we don't talk about it. We just try and have a good dinner or go outside and do something different and try and forget about it and start a fresh day. So I think that's very important. And talk it out, start a fresh day, or have an evening where you're in tears and he would just like bring me up together. So yeah. It is what it is.
It's the journey, right?
So, yes.
It's trickle with the broken glasses along the way. You find a way how to not to step on it or just become immune to it. But no, it's inspiring to hear how the support and how the positive thought process that you brought about. And I apologize if it brought back any bad memories.
No, that's fine. It only made me stronger. The industry is different.
Yeah.
It's heavy in operations and logistics. It's a different industry. It only made me stronger. And as you mentioned, you get immune. And now it's like, you're ready to fight with anything.
Right.
And it just grooms you in that direction.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. And this is very much at par with what I've heard from a lot of founders. And I'm glad that you found a way out of that, early pains, early stages, which is where I want to like take the conversation next is once you have realized that, okay, this has business potential, the early founder days challenges are kind of in your past, then you start thinking about building team, right? Hiring the right people, whether it be the drivers, building your own little support network within the business circumference, right? So how do you think about hiring the people? What are some of the decision metrics? Because you already mentioned that hiring people is the hardest thing to do, and which is right, because there's no quantitative way of doing it. It's always qualitative mixed with the quantitative and a bunch of back and forth that goes on if the person is a fit or not. So how do you guys think about hiring people onto your team?
I'll take a stab at it. So I think As Benny said, we had a lot of failures initially in terms of hiring the sales team because we did not realize how to manage or set up the expectation for sales team. So that was our failure also, that it was hard. We were giving them targets, we were giving them things to meet, but it was very hard to manage it because we were very oriented in terms of day to day, and the sales cycles were long, and it's like 6 months to 1 year sales cycle, and it was hard for us to manage all that, right? So I think what we learned over the time is technology helps a lot. There's no denying of it. Like, as much as you can automate yourself, and if robots can do your work, of course that actually helps a lot. But you do need a team. You need a support structure, and you need a team. So for us, the important aspect was culture. Like, do they fit into the company idea? Do they even believe in this company, or they are just here to get a paycheck? Okay, so that now on the driver side, the struggle was there were so many people looking for this pool of drivers. It was very hard for us to source drivers because we were competing with the best of the best, right? We couldn't afford to pay them that much. So we went out of the for the people who were seniors, and we went out of the pool which don't know how to use a phone. And so we could source those kind of people who were less school bus drivers but retired kind of thing. And we sourced that pool because they were not the typical Uber or Lyft drivers. We were able to train them, bring them on board. They're very trustworthy. They drive very safe. They are very careful. So though that pool of network and also female, we are more than like 80% of staff is female. So that kind of bringing the female entrepreneurs on board was very helpful because also it helps with kids. The whole interaction here is with the kids, and that, I think the two aspects. But on the office side, we definitely look for culture. We do not hire anybody who doesn't believe working with kids.
Right.
So I think, Benny, you want to chime in?
No, I think I agree with that. The office culture, company culture is very important. We want to bring diversity as well.
Yeah.
People need to get along and respect each other. Getting along is very important because we're a very small team. To understand the dynamics is important. So, just reading a resume paper could be very strong. It didn't mean much to me. I would appear in every initial interviews. I would appear in each and every one of them because I really needed to vet the right people for the office. People who worked with clients, in the operations, it's very important, safety, that they understand, they equally, I mean, they cannot love as much as I am, have the passion in my business or my idea, but they should be equally loving the idea. It's very key, rather than they're just switching jobs because...
You want to avoid people who are just going to switch off for like some extra money. That person you do not want to hire.
Right. Yeah. I think that'll give a massive churn on your end. You won't be able to provide the service that you promise you will. All right. And if they're not fitting with the culture, then the experience with the kids, as you mentioned. So there's a trickle down effect all the way to your end customer in this case, which is kids. And you don't want to, spoil those relationships for sure. And you're right. Like, a lot of times the resumes look very strong on the onset, great degrees and great background experience. But when it comes to personal interaction with that person, it's probably not the best. So 100% agree that you want to build the right culture. And given, how the world has shifted in the past few months, at least this year is kind of given a lot of cloud cover or to a lot of businesses to rethink their strategy and how they want to continue to grow and build. What has been some of the things top and center on your mind? And given schools were closed for a period of time, then you had summer break, but now things are reopening. How has that kind of shifted the business model, or has it accelerated?
No, absolutely. So I think COVID has hit us hard. Like, I would be lying to say that we were severely impacted. So I was listening to Airbnb CEO, and he said it took them like 10 or 12 years to build the business, and it took 1 month to destroy it. This is absolutely true for us. Like, the COVID really took us by unexpectedly hit the business hard, especially with all the regulations and political decisions made kind of thing. when we talk to our customers, like in during this process, one thing we have done is we constantly talk to our customers and talk to them that have they changed their behavior? Will they ever go to school or not? Like there's a basic question, like have the people shifted to online education all the way? And to me, that's the basic element that what we hear back from all the, even 70 to 80% parents want their kids back in school. And that is the stats coming from the surveys we have done with the parents, the surveys we have done with the schools kind of thing, which shows you that the traditional education and the importance of social interaction is so important that you do not, that cannot be replaced with Zoom calls. You want your kid to go out. You want your kid to experience nature. You want your kid to learn. You want your kid to interact with other kids. That aspect cannot be replaced. But I'm not saying online education is not here to stay. I think definitely it will play a part going forward because people have learned it works, right? And you can do some supplemental and other courses, but will it entirely replace the school education? No. And what we are seeing is from our clients, there's an increased demand, especially going forward when the things will open up, that they want to use our services even more given all the social distancing rules kind of thing. So that will change. But has it fundamentally destroyed our business? No, I would say that. So we are definitely down, but not out.
No, I completely agree. We were caught in surprise in March. I mean, we would hear things and then all of a sudden the schools got closed. So the schools, I definitely want to thank all my clients here at this point. They were very supportive.
Very supportive.
Because we have a school year contract with them. So we were, on paper, we were committed to provide service to them till June. And the services stopped in mid-March. And they were very supportive to us and to the employees, everybody, until the school year ended. However, we didn't operate at all. And then since June, we were definitely prepared, as every year that we have. It's a 10-month business, basically. So school year, the summers, we were prepared as usual. So, and schools now being going online, it's definitely has affected us, and we don't know when things will come back. But we're prepared. Everybody's trained. We have utilized this downtime in training all our staff, making all our vehicles equipped for the COVID return, which is a huge requirement. And we had a big list of requirement to meet, but we did all of that. But yeah, it's backbreaking for a small business, I must say. And this year is almost a write-off.
Right.
But we're ready. We feel strong. We're ready to restart whenever our schools are.
Right. And I think, yeah, it's just especially, and not just small businesses, even larger businesses. If you look at like Uber or the Lyft or the get arounds of the world, they're all very asset heavy, and that impacts when you're just locked down in your home. Does that make you question business at any point in time? Is be like, what are we doing with it? Back to your earlier point, like, is this the right place to be? And how do you tackle with that, or you try to find what are some other avenues how to allocate your assets better in case this thing doesn't kind of fly off the off the runway after things get back to normal?
Yeah, we had evaluated.
I think definitely we did think that is it the end of our business? Like, will people go back to school ever? Will they need in the same demand kind of thing? And that's where what we hear from the schools, and they are actually willing to sign contracts with us and like get us more business kind of thing. That gives me the thing that the business demand has not died. Like if I'm not trying to politicize it, but if the political lines were not drawn and if the schools were allowed to open, we would be running more capacity than before, than even we started kind of thing. So so I think, given all the election year politics kind of thing, if we leave that aside, is the student transportation demand dead? I would say no. That, like, definitely answer is no. We will be back in full force, more demand kind of thing. Now, the question is, can the small business survive for 6 to 8 months without getting paid and without getting anything? That's the challenge, I think. So if the businesses can survive this period, that would be the challenge. And you need deep pockets to survive this downtime. And the businesses, and unfortunately, which will not be able to survive this downtime, are going to get hit the hardest. Mm-hmm. Now, have we thought about alternatives and like selling the business or just decimating it? The thought did go through our mind. But when we hear back from the schools that no, they wanted us in full force and they were very supportive. They were even paying us for even we are not operating because they want to keep our service kind of thing. That shows that there's a trust and there's a they want this service to be back. Right. And the surveys from the parents, there is nothing which tells us that if I put it bluntly, if the school opens tomorrow, we will be more occupied than we will ever be.
That's amazing to hear, because I think what KidsJet has done, and to, if I were to summarize in one word, has established trust with its entire network of peers that it supports or provides service to. And it's good to hear that you're continuing to fight. And while a lot of other businesses are getting shut, to your point, don't have deep pockets or venture capital to support them to continue to grow during these times, it is a very difficult period to be in.
Yes.
You know, I think so far the journey you have described is absolutely inspiring and fascinating to hear about, your journey all the way from India to how you started as a solo co-founder to how being a husband-wife team to tackle and grow the business. If I were to ask you today, what is that one thing you would change going back in the past to probably have a different trajectory? What would that be?
I would take a stab at it. That basically, I would say initially, if you ask me if I would change one thing, if I could have avoided being operationally heavy, I could have done that, right? I would be more successful now. The reason for that is you have a finite amount of time in your day. And how you spend the time is super important. To me, as a founder or as any person who is work on a startup, it's very important for you to choose how you spend your time. Because if you spend your time on mundane tasks, that time is occupied and your energy is gone, right? So for us, a lot of time went into the operational aspect and making it perfect and putting the process, but that kind of was required by the business. If I could have avoided it, or if I could have found alternatives to not do it, I would have done it different, right? Being a pure technology play would have helped us a lot. And if I could have changed, I will change that one thing to be more, because we are coming from a world where we can solve problems and we can really be efficient about it and put structures around it. Getting involved in operations is a hard thing.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think if we could have avoided, now when you look back, I feel if we could have avoided getting into our assets,
yeah,
that was the key. If from the get-go, if we would have worked with our partners,
yeah,
the whole hiring process would be easier. We would have avoided to hire drivers. We would have completely, it would be way more smooth start. We've learned the hard way.
Yes.
And it took us some time, but I think along the way, we lost some time and in the learning process. So if we had that guidance to kind of work from the get-go, I think that's definitely the thing. That's the key thing. Ideas pivot. We did pivot our idea in the beginning. I mean, that if we could have avoided that, that would save us a good 6 months too. But ideas pivot. I mean, we started off with a thought. I mean, the whole birth of this idea was a more B2C idea, where it was Uber for children. That's the whole, the crux of the idea was that, and we pivoted to B2B. So I think along the way, that definitely took a good 6 to 8 months for us to reform things. So that's another thing, but that happens with any idea. It does here and there, depending on the need.
No, I totally agree. I think hindsight is always 20/20. And if you were to go back and do things differently, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. But it's I believe it's always a journey, and you learn so many different things, the deltas and the optimizations and the efficiency and the scaling that you do along the way is incomparable. Because if you already knew what was the right business model, then it wouldn't be as much fun, building it. So that's totally agree with it. Guys, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for sharing your journey. Before we end this conversation, for anyone who's listening to this podcast, I would love for them to get in touch with you. So what's some of the best way to be in touch with you?
If people want to get in touch, founders@kitschat.com or info@kitschat.com, best way to get in touch with us.
Our website is kitschat.com, and all the contacts are there as well. But thank you for having us.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
No, it was amazing. Thank you so much, guys. It was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
That was obviously a fantastic show, don't you think? There's so much learning. We often struggle to think about how a couple can run a business together, but with clear delineation of jobs and duties and things that needs to be solved, anything is possible. And we wish KidsJet all the best in the coming years. But this is the end of our episode today. So until next time and next week, namaste.